If we haven't met, great to have you here. And as Josh gave a little spoiler, I'm going to talk to you this evening about something that I can confidently say affects absolutely everybody, and it's the most common relationship that anybody has in their life, which is friendship. And here we are. Here's a great quote I found about friendship. A good friend is someone who helps you move. A great friend is someone who helps you move a dead body. So wise. That's not in the Bible, by the way. It's not in the Bible. But jokes aside, it seems that sadly few of us have many great friends. Friendship in this country, at least, is in crisis. Here are some statistics for you. 66% of people, so two-thirds of people, say that they have nobody to talk to about mental health, relationships, or money. 17% of older people are in contact with family, friends, and neighbours less than once a week. And 11% are in contact less than once a month. 40% of all older people in this country say that the TV is their main source of company, which is terrible. It's not just for old people, though. 60% of those aged 18 to 34 report feeling lonely often or sometimes. So that's over half of people in that age bracket feel lonely often or sometimes. And also, Sunday is statistically the loneliest day of the week. If only there was a community people could be part of that gathered on a Sunday, eh? I have to think of something. So much as our society has various problems, one of the biggest and least noticed is that we are in a loneliness epidemic. And that's terrible in itself, but loneliness leads to all sorts of other problems. In fact, having poor social connections is more likely to lead to early mortality than having a bad diet or not exercising. You're better going to the pub with friends than going to the gym if you want a long life. But while most people agree that close friendships are a great thing, and most people want to have them, finding meaningful friendship is so often a struggle. Why do so many people, perfectly nice people, struggle to have the depth of friendships that they'd love to have? Here's a few reasons, not all of the reasons, but let me tell a few of them that I think. Firstly, the influence of social media. Now, it's fashionable to blame social media for everything these days, isn't it? The issue is not social media per se, because there are some good things about it. You know, in certain ways, it enhances friendships. But the big problem is that social media overpromises and underdelivers. You can have 1,000 social media friends and be lonely, we know that. But we also know that there's something about the carefully crafted persona that people put online that means we are bombarded with the idea that everybody that we know has a great life all the time and we don't. And even though we know that that's not true deep down, we still buy into it. And it inhibits friendships because you're constantly presented with an inauthentic, curated version of everybody else. And then you do it too. And people who are inauthentic most of the time are always lonely because nobody really knows them. Second thing, the elevation of romantic love. Our culture has made romantic love the be-all and end-all to the point that everybody, Christians included, slips into the idea that you cannot be happy without it. You've got to have it. And we sort of assume this, even though most people through history have not believed this themselves. But in our culture, it's everything. How many glossy magazines do you see about who's friends with who? None. It's about who's sleeping with who. That's what everybody wants to know. How many classic albums are there about friendship? I can't think of any. There are some great films about friendship, but they're in the minority. And the big irony of this is that making romantic relationships the absolute center at the expense of friendship puts too much pressure on those romantic relationships, and that's one reason many of them don't work out and they fail. Far too many people don't have any close relationships beyond their partner because they've bought into the lie that that relationship is all they need. Then there's the dream of independence. This idea we have that independence and freedom are synonymous, and it's rampant in our culture, meaning we're encouraged through all sorts of different messaging, the stories that we see, to be independent people who don't need anybody else, and to celebrate that as a great thing, when in reality it's a complete myth. We all need other people. Even the most introverted person who works from home all week and loves doing so and loves their own company and doesn't like to leave the house is not in the end served by a life of total disconnection from other people. But fourthly, and I think this is the biggest thing actually, I think this is the biggest reason, The experience of being let down. The others are sort of external influences, but this is a personal experience I would guess we've all had. And it's probably the greatest inhibitor to friendship for all of us. I reckon that we've all at some point been let down by friends, at least in childhood and probably adulthood too. When I was growing up, my family moved around a lot, and I found it difficult to develop good long-term friendships for that reason. And I remember once, I was about 12, and I got sort of into this group of friends at school, and they were already friends, and then I sort of joined in. And they started being a bit off with me, one or two of them, and I can still picture I was at the house of one of them. And I don't know why, but I kind of said to him straight, "You don't actually want to be friends with me, do you?" And he said in quite a polite way, "No, I don't." And I remember being back to square one. And that was over 30 years ago. That stayed in my memory. Now, I was a total pain in the bum when I was 12, so he was probably being very reasonable. But I bet everybody has had that sort of experience, especially as a child, of being rejected as a friend. And those experiences affect our relationships as we grow up. They slowly make us more guarded. And I don't doubt some of us as adults have had friends who've let us down very badly. And if the world presents us with people who always disappoint our expectations, how can we allow ourselves to commit to others in the sort of close friendships that we all crave and need? You enjoying this message so far? You know, one thing I love about being a follower of Jesus is that the Bible comments on everything that's important. It's not just a big story or a set of religious ideas. It speaks into the whole range of human experience. And I wonder how often even Christians think to themselves, I wonder what God has to say about what friendship is supposed to look like. Now, through this summer, we're looking at an ancient collection of Jewish wisdom about life that's in the Bible. We call it the Proverbs. And Proverbs are truisms. They are true about life regardless of whether you even walk with God. You read them and you just go, yep, that I can see that, that happens in real life, which is amazing because it was written 3,000 years ago, and it's because people are always basically the same, aren't they? People, technology changes, nations change, but basically people are the same. And most of the Proverbs are like ancient wisdom tweets. They talk about many things, but one of them is today's topic. It has something to say about the type of friendships we'd be wise to pursue. So we're not going to look at one passage, because Proverbs mostly doesn't work that way. We're going to pick out some great one-liners it has about friendship. And I'm convinced if we approached our friendships like the Proverbs say, we'd all end up with better ones. We'd end up with richer friendships than we do. So we're going to see four things. Real friendship means choice. Real friendship means constancy. Real friendship means candor. And real friendship means community. And yes, they all conveniently begin with the letter C. It's like I planned this. Okay, so that first one, real friendship means choice. Proverbs 12 verse 26 says, "The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray." Now that's quite an interesting phrase because most people will say, oh yeah, you know, you've got to choose your friends wisely. That's a common phrase. But that's usually they're thinking about how trustworthy those friends are. You know, can I trust them? But this is more about carefully considering the influence your friends will have on you. Because the thing is, you will end up being like the friends that you have. These days, everybody likes to say, well, I'm independent-minded and I think for myself. I'm my own person. Oh, really? And where did you even get the idea that being independent and thinking for yourself was a virtue? You didn't invent that. You were influenced by somebody else. Everybody is influenced by the people they spend time with. If you spend three nights a week with friends who play bridge, what are you going to end up doing? You're going to play bridge. If you're constantly around friends who take recreational drugs, what are you going to end up doing? Probably taking drugs. So choose carefully who you let have influence in your life. However strong a person you think you are, however much resolve you have, you will be influenced by those that you let in. Now this is not saying don't spend time with tricky people. Some of us spend all our time with tricky people. Some of us spend none of our time with tricky people. Some of us are tricky people. But do you ever stop and think about who you're spending time with and why? You have maybe not much choice about your family or your work colleagues or anything like that. but you choose who your friends are. And the proverb suggests you're culpable for your friendship choices. You choose the relationships that you let have influence. Are the ones that you've got leading you in a good direction? And a good way to consider that is to ask this: when I am with this person or this group, what do I end up doing, thinking, or talking about? Where does it tend to go? That will tell you what influence they have on you. Second thing, friendship means constancy. Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity." A real friend loves at all times. That means when it's good, when it's bad, when it's in between. Now, of course, we all would probably say, yeah, a good friend is likely to be available to support us when times are hard. But personally, when things are difficult for me, I'm drawn to the friends who are there when times are not hard. There's a constancy to them. If you're only a friend to people when they're going through a rough patch, and you know that's really honourable, but you're not really their friend, you're their social worker or their coach. It's a one-way thing. Real friendships are about the whole range of life. And so genuine friendship is, yes, you know, it's taking over some soup when the other person's sick, or you know, go for a coffee when they're stressed out. But I think it's easy to lose sight of the everyday richness of friendship. Being available, showing up, doing stuff that cultivates relationship. And because of the pressure these days of life and work and family and so on, and in some cases just because we can't be bothered, we often struggle to commit to those everyday consistent things. Personally, this is a mini rant here, okay? Personally, I can't understand it when someone tries to organise something social. They stick their neck out, they say, hey, let's do this. And everybody says, oh, I might come, when do you need to know by? You ever seen that? In other words, when is the last possible second I can commit to your thing just in case I get a better offer before then? That's bad friendship. Or just as bad, those people who let others make everything happen. They might show up, but they never reciprocate. They never initiate. Again, bad friendship. Just showing up, getting together, making it a priority to connect with people. That is the part that I think we often miss. We do friendship at convenient times, not, as the proverb says, at all times. Third thing, real friendship means candor. Proverbs 27:5-6 says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. I love this. This is written in a Middle Eastern Jewish culture, which to this day has a big emphasis on speaking your mind. They don't tend to do politeness or political correctness like we do. But we've gone to a place where our culture basically says, if you disagree with me, you must be against me. Or if you don't support my decision, whatever it is I decide, then you can't really be my friend. What a pile of nonsense that is. Real friends tell you the truth out of love, and sometimes it may wound you. But of course, speaking the truth to somebody is hard. The proverb uses the word rebuke quite strong. It sounds like telling somebody off, and it's paired with the other thought. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. How does that work? Well, an enemy is not just somebody that wants to go to war with you. It's somebody who is more interested in themselves than you. They care about themselves more than you. They may even have an ulterior motive. An enemy, someone who doesn't really love you, can't be bothered to tell you the truth and risk the discomfort. Why would they? It's an inconvenience. There's no gain for them in rocking the boat. So they'll shower you with kisses. They'll just say nice things because it makes for an easier life. But a friend is willing to undergo the discomfort of wounding you or hurting your feelings or risking your displeasure. I've got a really great friend, and we've known each other for years. We were best man at each other's weddings, known each other a long time, lived together, we traveled together, we've done loads of stuff. I love the guy. And years ago, my friend got engaged to a young lady, and a bunch of us who were his friends thought it was a really, really bad idea for many reasons. Long story, wasn't a good idea. And I knew I had to speak to him. And we had one particular conversation where we sat either side of our dining table, sort of face to face, and I had to say to him, mate, I think this is a really bad idea. And I asked him a bunch of difficult questions, and I knew going into the conversation that if he went on to marry her, it would make our friendship tricky forever, because he'd know that I basically disapproved of his choice. Long story short, he did break it off in the end and is now married to somebody else who is a much better match. So it ended really well. But the thing is, I had to risk wounding him, much as it was painful to do. Much as I didn't really want to on many levels. But I had to do it out of love. Now, most people don't want to have that sort of conversation, so we put it off in the name of tolerance, or keeping the peace, or not wanting to be judgmental. But I think this helps. If you look at the proverb again, it assumes that when you speak the truth to somebody, you are already their friend. Just walking around saying difficult things to people about their blind spots is not friendship. I know people who do this. It's not a great thing. That's just rudeness. It's also not just giving someone your opinion about absolutely every subject. Good truth speaking to a friend is carefully chosen words about the right issue at the right time, about the things that actually matter. If you've got an existing friendship, a friendship of constancy, the bridge should be strong enough to take the weight of that tough conversation. And just to turn this around slightly, let me ask, how are you at receiving truth? Can your friends, can the people that you know care about you, tell you how it is, or question something, out of love, without you flying off the handle or changing the subject? Can they do that? I hope they can. Fourth thing, last on my little list, real friendship means community. Proverbs 11:14 says, "For lack of guidance, a nation falls, but victory is won through many advisors." To do well in life, you need more than one friend. You'll make better decisions with more sources of wisdom. If I look around at my closest friends, they're all very different from each other. And now I might speak to a different one depending on what it is I'm going to talk about. But I did some research on this, and it's quite interesting. Although we need to have more than one friend, sociologists reckon the most people anyone can have a really meaningful friendship with at any one time is five. Now, that doesn't mean you can only like five people in the world, but in terms of really knowing and being known, we tend to max out at five people. So you need more than one, but don't feel bad if you don't have loads of friends that seem really close. It doesn't really work, despite what Facebook says. Now think about this in terms of church. We're a reasonably big church, as churches go, and that creates challenges around building friendships. If there were 10 of us in the church every week, we'd all know each other really well. But we have, you know, we have new people at Maybridge every week, and welcome if that's you. But sometimes I think we need to reset our expectations around friendship as a church. I've heard people say things like, "Well, there's loads of people at Maybridge that I don't know. I used to know everybody at Maybridge." You don't need to know everybody. You can't. You can't be meaningful friends with everybody in this room. But you do need to know and be known by some people in this room. Now, let me say, and I'm trying to speak the truth in love here, okay? If you come to church sporadically and you arrive late and you leave as soon as the service ends and you don't join any serving teams and you don't participate outside Sundays, you won't make good friends here. That's not a punishment, that's just an inevitability. How can anyone get to know you if you're not present and you them? And so this church, like all churches, is intended to be a community, a network of overlapping sacrificial friendships. But often we do get it wrong. If you've been let down by people at church and that's, you know, inhibited your ability to create friends, I'm really sorry. That's not how church is supposed to be. Christians are not perfect, of course. But also remember, part of why church isn't perfect is you. You're part of the problem. So am I, probably to a greater extent. So here's the thing. Everything I've said so far, I think you could say, this is good, solid advice, regardless of whether you stand with God or where you stand with Christianity. And that's the genius of Proverbs. They work regardless of what you do with God himself a lot of the time. And that's because they have God's insight into human nature. But everything that I've just talked about on its own is only of limited help. It's a great set of friendship aspirations. There's another proverb, though, that says this. Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person, who can find? Who can find? Our innermost desire is for the kind of friendship even our best friends regularly fall short of, and we can't be that friend to other people that we'd like to be either. The American psychologist Brené Brown researched this, and she says, after studying vulnerability, shame, and authenticity for the past decade, here's what I've learned. A deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need of all people. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, to belong. When those needs are not met, we don't function as we're meant to. We break, we fall apart, we ache, we hurt others. In other words, we need friends. We were made for it, and when friendship doesn't happen or it doesn't work, it messes us up. Most of us deeply want to have great friends. All of us need them, whether we want them in our feelings or not. And yet nobody in this room is qualified to meet all of anybody else's needs as a friend. So is that all there is? Some advice, some nice aspiration, a clear need we all have, and a tough reality about the huge gap between our desires and our regular experiences? If only in our broken and deeply lonely society, if only there was a greater friend who could be this and who could transform our other friendships. I mentioned earlier, Proverbs are about 3,000 years old. And like all the Old Testament books, it sort of mysteriously points forward to a solution to every problem that we face, friendship included. And it's not an idea, it's a person. And there's one proverb that gives us a tiny glimpse, a heads up about this person. It's Proverbs 18, verse 24. And it says, one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. There is a friend. We could really do with a perfect friend. What does a perfect friend look like? Someone who always chooses us, someone who is a constant presence, someone who speaks to us with genuine but gentle candor, and someone who always includes us in a wider community. So you can use Proverbs as a great book of advice about friendships, and by all means do. But what about this friend? This proverb would have stood out all those years ago, perhaps more than any in the whole book, because in Middle Eastern culture, family is everything, more than in our culture. Your brother would be the person with whom you'd have the longest relationship in your life, because your life and theirs would overlap for more years than your parents or your children. Your brother would be the one that could get away with saying hard things to you, because he's your brother. He'd be the one you could trust through any circumstance. He'd be your wingman, your backup, your companion, your place to bounce ideas off. But Proverbs makes the promise, there's a friend who sticks even closer. This person will be closer than your own flesh and blood. And note, it's not saying it's mutual. This friend sticks close to you regardless of what you happen to be doing, whether you're being a good friend. 1,000 years after this was written, the book we know as John's Gospel records many things that Jesus said and did. And the night before he was killed, he has this really intense chat with his closest friends, one of whom was John, who wrote this. And because Jesus knows what's coming, he knows what's about to happen, it's a bit like a sort of deathbed chat where you tell your closest people your most important thoughts. And here's a bit of that conversation. He says to them, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father I've made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. Now, just to draw out two things from this before I close. Firstly, if the Christian faith is true, which for some of us that may still be a big if, then God lowers himself to our level and invites us to be his friends. Look at Jesus' life. Here it says that he chooses us, but look at his life. See how he also measures up in terms of constancy, candor, and community. Every other religion or worldview or philosophy offers some great advice about friendships. There's some great stuff out there. In Christianity, God offers a great friend. Not just advice about friendships, he offers us a friend. And secondly, Jesus says he has chosen his friends to bear fruit. In other words, he'll grow character in them. When you're friends with Jesus, he will reshape all of your other relationships. If you're friends with Jesus, there's less pressure on your other friends to meet your needs. He'll make you a better friend to them as well. If you're friends with Jesus, you can experience greater and greater freedom from the things that ruin your friendships. If you're friends with Jesus, you know you're loved and you can reach a place of security that means you are not devastated when somebody speaks the truth to you in love. A few hours after he said these words, Jesus was crucified. The biblical story understands that event as God's way of cosmically and permanently securing our friendship. Jesus deals with our imperfect friendship on the cross, and in doing so offers his perfect friendship to us. He lays down his life. That's the friendship that makes him closer than a brother. You'll never find a friend like him anywhere else. There isn't one. Now, just to reflect on this, there's going to be a video that comes on the screen in a moment, if that's okay, William. There's this great song called What a Friend I Found. Some of us may know it, some of us may not. And rather than stand up, I'm just going to suggest that we just sit and reflect on the words of the song, on the friendship that Jesus extends to us, just for a few moments while this video's on, and then the band will come and lead us further after that, if that's all right.